Hello and welcome to our August podcast of Wine, Women, and Song. I'm your host, Jay Austin Bittner, and I am here today with
Heather Lockard Wheeler,
Jessica Stava,
Zoe Stewart,
Katherine Davis,
Paige Stroop Bittner.
Wonderful, thank you. And before we get down to the business of the podcast, I want to remind all of our listeners that you are able to follow our podcast not just when we release each of our recordings, but you can follow us throughout the month. We have a wonderful Facebook page, Wine, Women, and Song Podcast. Find us and like us. It's a great way to keep abreast not only of the wines that we're drinking, but the upcoming themes that we may or may not have, as well as articles and arts goings-on in the areas that all of us submit at various times throughout the month. We also have a Twitter account, which is WWS Podcast. So, you know, you can also find all these links on Facebook, which might be the easiest way to connect to us at first. And most importantly, we have a blog. We've had a blog since the beginning, but we perhaps didn't point out to you that the blog is a great way for you to not only, you know, follow the podcast itself, but to remind yourself, hey, who was that singer, or when was that recorded, or what was that selection? Because all of the musical selections and all of the wine selections from each podcast are put on there. It also has bios of all of the regulars, and that's also where we post bios about our guests. Now, if you didn't get a chance to read my wife's blog post of her bio, you should, because it makes me smile. And I'm just shameless plug from the husband. But I definitely think that those are all three great ways for you to follow us, and the blog might be most helpful. Now, the blog is Wine, Woman, Song at WordPress.
Wait.
And what that woman is the O and the E out of women is left out because Wine, Woman, and Song is apparently a very popular blog title. So yes, if you can't remember how to spell all that, that's fine. I recommend that you go to Facebook. It's a great conduit to all of these things. And if you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes. And we thank all of you. We thank all of you, and it's also a great way for you to give us feedback. I was lucky enough last week to talk to one of our listeners, one of the few handful of listeners we have, who told me that she went out and bought one of the New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs that we tasted, and she liked it. It was the Great Whack. Nice. So we encourage any of you who are listening, if you try any of these wines, or if you listen to any of these recordings, or send us those words of suggestion and or encouragement. We would love your interaction. So without further ado, I'm going to move on into our themed wine to talk a little bit about it. It's Albariño, which is a Spanish grape, also Portuguese grape. It's from the Galicia region in northwestern Spain, right there on the coast. And of course, it's also grown in Portugal, which is just to the south of that part of Spain. And one of the characteristics about Albariño is that it loves that sea air and high humidity. And the grape, as a result, is typically grown on high trellises, so the air can circulate all around it and not get pests and other mold growth on it. And so, since Albariño came first on the scene and around the early 2000s, it's actually grown into a worldwide grown grape, and there's actually New World productions that are being, you know, well reviewed. But this evening we'll probably concentrate most on the grape in its Spanish home, and the most prominent region for it is the Rios Baixos. Yes, Jessica?
What would you serve with it?
Albariño is awesome for sushi. One of the things about its acidity is it's actually like a wine version of wasabi. Wasabi is often used in sushi to cleanse your palate, so the next time you taste the fish, it's fresh and you're tasting everything, you know, that's wonderful about it. And so one of the great things about this wine is it's a very clean finish, almost always. Albert, you know, finish very clean, like a razor's edge or a karate chop, as just demonstrated by Heather. And so it's a great one for sushi. It's also, because of where it's grown, as often happens, it's great with seafood and shellfish, which is all what you would, you know, find right there on the northwestern coast of Spain. So those are great things that I would pair with it. There was one other thing I was going to say. Oh, so when you look at the name Rias Baixas, it's R-I-A-S and B-A-I-X-A-S. And it kind of looks like, you know, Rias Biaches or something. You know? But I had to pronounce it a lot to get it right. So when I just, if you looked at me funny, as I said, Rias Baixas, I totally understand.
Rias
Biaches. Okay, that's Florina's version, that's right. So, without further ado, we should probably move into our first selection.
Well, cheers, ladies.
Cheers. Cheers.
Thank you.
So, that was two selections of the same singer from the same song cycle by two of the different members of our group. And I was like, how awesome is this? And they're both short enough, I have to put them together and back to back because that's serendipity you cannot replicate. So that first selection was from Zoe. Mm-hmm. And Zoe, that was...
El Paño Maruno by Manuel de Falla from the Suite Popular Español.
Right, and the second choice was by Catherine, also from the same, you know,
Same cycle with Teresa Berganza singing. Mm-hmm. That is actually from a recording from the 1960s.
1960 itself,
and
yeah.
The pianist is Gerald Moore. And it's actually... It's a video as well as an audio. It's very fun to go and check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I thought it would be really neat to have them back to back because you know, the same singer, same song cycle, and she's Spanish, of course.
Yes,
you
she
guys
is.
Are great.
Yes.
And then, but you've got so many different, you know, things going on in each piece. Now, why did you choose yours, Zoe?
My selection is the guitar arrangement of. Mm-hmm. It was written originally for piano by Manuel de Falla, but it was arranged for guitar. And the guitarist is Narciso Yepes, who is one of the preeminent, very important Spanish guitarists. We mostly think of Andrés Segovia, but he's like this, you know. But Yepes was actually very instrumental, forgive the pun, in kind of modernizing guitar technique, like things that we do with our hands to play more notes, you know, is something that he kind of came up with. And what's also special about this recording is that he's playing a 10-string guitar. So guitars, probably most listeners know that it's 6 strings, tuned mostly in fourths with a third, but this has some extra bass notes, so it has a bit of a wider range, which is nice when you're playing piano music because, you know, pianists can play a lot more notes than guitarists can. It's just... it's just how it goes. So, but this song, the translation, it's the Moorish cloth, and it's a very short, on the fine cloth in the store, a stain has fallen, it sells at a lesser price because it has lost its value, which, as this being a women's podcast, it's that very kind of despicable notion of, you know, well, she's, you know, been stained, quote unquote, so she is of less value. But it's a powerful song. There's kind of a lot of, like, I don't know, I hear a lot of kind of anger or a lot of, you know, tragedy in it. And I was familiar with the song just because I've just heard it a lot. And this is sort of my favorite. I really appreciate this particular one. But I wasn't familiar with Miss Berganza, but she is something.
Yes.
I mean, this was just, this was really, I thought her performance was just fabulous, as was Senor Yepes.
That's the first song in the cycle.
Yes, this is the first one.
Does the guitar recording come chronologically early? Was it made after the...
Yeah, this one is after. This one was in the 70s. And you've sung these.
Yes, well, I think everyone who ever had a classical guitarist for a boyfriend at one time. Sung these.
I never sang that.
Well, that's because you've only ever had girlfriends. That I know of. But anyway, moving right along.
That's another podcast.
that's another podcast, right? But no, that actually is my favorite too, Zoe, of the five, because I don't know, it just has so much depth. There's so much there. There's something, like, I completely agree, really angry about it, but sad at the same time, and it's just really good choice.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. I don't know, you know, I know that the piano is the original thing, but somehow it just really works for guitar.
It did work. It worked very nicely.
But even when you hear the piano, the version, it almost sounds like if I was trying to imitate a guitar.
It's very percussive.
And Catherine?
To be fair, I like both versions. I like it with the guitar and I like it with the piano. But since the piano was the original one, I was like, I'm going to put that in there. And I do think Gerald Moore is pretty fantastic. And, you know, it is a an earlier recording of Berganza, and she is one of my, I'm a mezzo, if you've noticed, I pretty much bring a mezzo every time, usually, to this group.
Represent.
But she, you know, I came to classical solo singing a little later than most, and she was one of the first people that my then voice teacher got me to listen to, and what a tremendous choice. I mean, it's just such a beautiful instrument. It's so effortless, and in, again, this sort of day and age where mezzos are kind of forced into, as are sopranos and every other voice type, I'm a lyric or I'm a dramatic and I can't sing this rep and I should sing that rep. Berganza just really sang, I mean, she never did very heavy things, but she's probably best known to a wider audience as Carmen. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was the definitive Carmen for decades. But then she was just wonderful with Mozart, and she's wonderful with a variety of song rep. I think she's just a tremendous interpreter.
She has a beautiful voice, and I think what I love about her is when you listen to it, it's just complete, and what she does with her instrument, you can tell that there's just a lot of power there and just well-roundedness, and she's able to, I'm always impressed every time I hear a recording of her, and
Well, the 1960 recording, which was the one with piano, is like about 5 years after she debuted and discovered. I mean, it's like very early in her career.
Yes.
And she's still alive today.
Yes.
I don't know what she's doing per se.
Whatever she wants.
She sounds like a soprano in the first recording.
She does. I mean, she's.
But by the time we get to your Zoe, the duskiness of like that really rich mezzo quality has come in, and it's very interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily known that it was the same person.
And I wonder if, I mean, I guess I haven't like looked at the scores, but I do wonder if, I mean, I assume the keys are the same. Do you know the keys of the first one?
I actually don't know.
So that would be something that would be kind of interesting, because I mean, there is like a finite number of keys that one would responsibly put guitar music in.
Without
it sounding terrible and being completely impossible to play. So, I mean, I don't know. And so this
I think that is a follow through for you and Catherine, Zoe,
yeah,
to then,
perhaps,
you know, put on our.
On the blog.
We should put it on the blog.
You'll have to check our Facebook page.
I might have access to a library somewhere.
Okay, well.
Interwebs, do your magic.
That's right.
We'll get
Google
on that.
Machine.
Yeah.
Googles.
But I thought they were both incredibly great selections.
Yes,
and of course,
absolutely.
Perfect to go with, you know, Spanish wine.
Yes.
So what did we think of the first wine?
Amazing.
It's so creamy.
Loved it.
I loved it. I wouldn't use the word creamy.
Huh. What word would you use?
I would use like very, very tart.
Crisp.
Yes. Crisp, tart,
I can see the tart too, but to me it's creamy on the finish.
Okay, let me. I'm gonna think on that.
Well, I just drank all mine, so I don't have.
Jess,
would you like another sip of mine? Refresh yourself.
It was interesting. It was like getting hit by a wave, because all at once it's there, and you have all this flavor, and then it's gone. You're like, wait, what just happened? It's gone.
So it's kind of like a wasabi in that sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like you get hit, and you're like, wait, what?
And then the aromas are kind
it's
of like
cocaine of wine.
Strong, fruity, and limoncello.
Sorry, we're having.
The wine has kind of got this scent with like Riesling-esque in that it has kind of florals and some stone fruit on it.
Yes.
And then the palate has a lot of like peachy kind of stone fruit on it.
Yeah.
But that peach flavor is very fleeting, because it does just go into that acidity.
Yes.
I was just
going to reiterate, for any new listeners we have who maybe missed the first couple of podcasts where we mentioned that we are in a house with four animals, two cats and two dogs. If you hear us yell limoncello, we're not asking for the Italian liqueur. It's limoncello, the cat.
I am. Nobody ever brings it to me.
Very upset. So just wanted to throw that in there real quick as an aside.
Yes, and they are going crazy. The cat, Limoncello has the kitty crazies right now.
He does.
For anyone who has cats, you will know what that means. So
yes.
He's going crazy.
Well, that's good. So, I think this first wine, I mean, I have the benefit of having had many Albarinos, is a very typical Albarino in terms of what you would expect if you were to, you know, pick one up off the shelf. And you can see why it would be really good with all the things I mentioned at the start.
All right.
Let's
see.
So I think it's now time to move on to our second selection, and I'll go ahead and pour our second wine as that plays.
I've actually sung both.
You have?
Yes.
So tell us what this was.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is I'm easily assimilated from Candide. This is sung by the role of the old lady, who's just the old lady.
Right.
What else am I supposed to say? Oh, yeah, that dude. Yes.
That
yes.
dude.
And he was actually conducting this report.
Yes, yes. Wow. And this was Miss Ludwig, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Kevin.
Yes, and so I like it because it's the full orchestration and you can just enjoy it in all its glory. And it's just a fun, it's a fun piece, but, you know, the messages, you know, for any, I mean, you know, also the messages, what anybody who's come to, whether it's the United States or wherever, you know, you gotta kind of lose a little bit of, I guess, who you were and just assimilate. But, you know, I love it because it's very tongue-in-cheek and irreverent and,
yeah.
You know, we just all at the end of the day, we just gotta get along and just accept everybody's differences, and that's what makes us so special. But enough of my political views aside. it's just a fun role to sing, and I think she does an amazing job.
Yeah. When did you sing the old lady?
None of your business.
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
In the shower.
No, it was actually at Montgomery College. Montgomery College. Yeah, that place. Yeah.
That is so funny. Yeah. For our listeners, Heather is not vocally an old lady.
yes,
not
I am.
At all.
Everybody here, I think, is under 40, except for me. So
no. No, dude. I'm past 40, man. I'm pushing. Never mind.
42. Right. There you go.
Oh, we're not even going to talk about age. But
I'm sorry. I'm such an insensitive
rude.
Dude.
Oh, there we go.
But the piece.
The piece, yes.
The piece.
What?
Yeah, I'm so easily assimilated.
Right, so let's discuss it.
Yeah.
So let's discuss it.
I mean, I was thinking actually of when you were talking about the whole, you know, go into different country and all of those things and how we all, you know, have
yes.
to. I was thinking of our host when we were in Guatemala.
Ah,
yes.
Okay.
Who's Southern.
She's from Alabama and married a Guatemalan.
Oh, wow.
Who had come to the University of Alabama. And now she's been there for what, like 35 years? And...
Is it Guatemalan?
Yeah. It's Guatemalan with a southern accent.
Oh, that must
fabulous.
Be just adorable to hear.
Yeah.
No, I do remember being in Italy for 6 weeks, and I did want to just be assimilated. I felt like Godzilla. No, it was just everywhere I went, people would point and stare like, American! I felt like,
yes.
You know, and it just, so there is something... I don't know. I just wish we didn't do that.
I felt oddly enough like that in Spain.
Oh, well, that and that dovetails
nicely. I was so
nicely.
Much taller than everybody. I was like, oh, for heaven's sake, I guess. They know that I was drinking hormones while I was growing up. I love it. Anyway.
No hormones in the wine.
Thank
no.
heavens. I don't
Good.
Need it any bigger.
Phew. So, I mean, again, Candide is an interesting piece, though.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, the old lady is very tongue-in-cheek. She is a survivor throughout
yes.
the entire show. So
she doesn't have one... She's missing a buttock. She's missing a butt.
She is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very specific.
She had
an,
I did not
just
know
one.
That.
She had an accident.
I couldn't tell from
that.
The recording because
right.
it sounded like a double buttock recording.
Yeah, but no.
That's
you
how
never
good
know.
Of a performer she is. She sang through it.
Perseverance. Example to us all.
So
go on,
Candide, Tech,
and
be smart.
Does deal with a lot of... very political issues
yes.
and very sensitive issues, but
yes.
Doing it all through satire and
yes.
irony and these devices. But it the music is really tremendous, and
mm-hmm.
But the show is problematic. It had about and I'm going to forget now because I didn't brush up on it. But I mean, it seemed like a football team of librettists, I mean, all of whom were very well thought of, but it was sort of thrown around from pillar to post. So it is not the most successful piece as it's sort of a question, is it an opera, is it an operetta, is it musical theater, what is Candide? So probably, dear listener, what you would have heard most is the overture to Candide, which is often... taken for orchestra performances,
mm-hmm.
symphony
yes.
performances, or the final piece, which is Make Our Garden Grow. Yes.
Make Our Garden.
Yes. Yes. For any of our soprano listeners, it's just a way to really get those larynx just up into your nose.
It's just a screamer.
It's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. Yeah, it is. It's kind of, I think if you love the piece like I do, you embrace the faults, you know, much like a significant other. And you just find the best. You know, sorry, baby. I'm sorry you don't make sense right now. It's okay. I love you. Okay, let's just get on to the number. All right, honey. Let's just sing. All right, here we go. So, yeah, but, you know, I love it. And I just remember friends coming to see it when I first was in it. And they just said, that was just so irreverent. And I'm a little offended. And I was like, wow.
Huh.
Wow. Theater's fun.
that probably is the point.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, think about it. I mean, if you think about Candide, and I don't know, think about, let's just say the political race coming up. Just, I mean, geez Louise. I mean, you can't write this stuff. I mean, yeah. You know, it's just, yeah, the best of all possible worlds. There we go.
So what about wine number two? Do we think it was the best of all possible worlds? Mm.
I like one.
But, I like this one.
I like this one.
What's this one have on it that's different than the other?
Well, the nose really threw me at first. Yes,
me too.
It was like a dirty socks nose. Seriously, it smelled like smells like dirty socks. And now that it's opened it up, it doesn't as much. But when it was first poured. And I will say, I went in and grabbed a piece of cheese. And a little bit of bread, and suddenly
Seymour.
Yeah, it went really nicely with the beach.
Now this, I would call creamy, would you?
Yes. I would.
And Zoe, you like this one better?
I do like this one better.
The punch in the face.
No, I like the first one. The first one.
I mean,
this one definitely has more of like a round, longer sweet fruit note to it.
Yeah,
I get a lot of peach.
Yeah, a ton of peach.
Yeah.
And then it does have acidity. It does finish cleanly, but it's not as like karate chop as the first one.
Yeah.
It's a much fuller mouthfeel.
Yes,
definitely.
I agree. And I think had I not experienced wine number one, I think I would love this one.
Well, they're all. I mean, yeah. I try not to pick any. Shitty wine.
Oh, please enjoy the dress.
I really appreciate that.
But you know, I was in another podcast and they picked terrible wine. I'm not on there anymore. Yeah. Good choice. That's a lie.
No, but it's a very distinctively different Albarino. It's not it's not of a kind, so to speak.
No.
The things that are similar actually is maybe the fruit flavor character is definitely that peachy fruit, and it is very common to have a peach flavor or even like lychee fruit, which if you've ever had is actually sometimes described as having a peach-like flavor. So it's kind of a very minimal distinction there. So yeah, it was really nice, but I think it's time to move on to our third selection. Okay. And so does Sambuca.
Yes.
You gonna meow a little more, Sambuca?
Yep, here we go. Thank you. suddenly something dramatic happened right there.
Yeah.
This selection was chosen by Paige.
Yes. So it's, for our listeners, it's from Verdi's Don Carlo, which is set in Spain. And the singers are Plácido Domingo and Montserrat Caballé, who are both Spanish. So it's kind of a Spanish triple threat.
That's right.
But, you know, I have to say, I think I heard Don Carlo, like, a long time ago, but I wasn't so familiar. Oh, and this was the, I think it's called the duet and finale, or...
Right, what's well, right at the end of the opera.
Yeah, very end of the opera. And, I mean, I've heard it before, but when I was kind of trying to research something that was Spanish, I found this, and just, it's not the best recording, but I think, you know, this was both of them at the height of their careers, and it's just stunning.
I don't know about the height of their careers. It was 1971, but it was definitely when they were in their prime.
Yes, they were in their
vocal prime, certainly. Yes. I mean, I'm sure, I think actually, if you think about Domingo, his career probably peaked after his prime, because, you know,
right,
like, in terms of popularity,
yeah, true.
And it's not like he was, you know, crap after he peaked. It's just that, you know, his peak was really before he became the worldwide household name that he is today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That Rolex sponsor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we all aspire to.
Featured on Sesame Street. Well, I mean, it's a beautiful, I mean, yes, we are hearing it live, so we're hearing cough-coughs and rustles and all of this stuff, which of course is then added to by what we call the zoo here of two dogs and cats and me going to get a brownie. But, you know, Domingo is so ardent in this role. I mean, he's sort of pulsing with emotion. And what I found was very interesting, I mean, I think it's beautiful, but Caballé as Elisabetta,
yeah,
is, come on, it's Caballé, so she sings like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, she's very cool in that. Like, I felt it was very,
Didn't sound like a mother saying goodbye to her son?
Yeah, it was just very reserved. And I'm not saying that lessened the effect, but it was actually kind of nice to have, for my listening ears, it, you know, this sort of the young and brash and exciting tenor, and then a very reserved is the wrong word, but you guys know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very polished and it's very formal.
Mm.
There's no edginess to it so much, and his is a little edgy, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that I actually noticed when I was in Spain, is that I felt that there was a formality culturally that just struck me, and I think Montserrat Caballé, there's something very stately and elegant about the way she sings.
Mm-hmm.
It's she's not going to be like doing anything crazy that's going to throw her voice out of line. She's very much like, the line comes first, the sound comes first. And I just think, and Don Carlo, what an amazing opera.
Well, the thing about this live recording, last thing that they pretty much sing before King Philip and the Inquisitor come in and basically, you know, chop chop. So, you know, it's one of those things where this is the end of their night.
This
and that's what they sound like.
She would kind
of.
Oh, I see what you mean. I mean, like, she would be, you would think she would be a little tired, maybe slightly a little bit.
Yeah.
Not as
edge of night singing, as Mr. Harp would say.
Yeah, and she said, she flows that whatever the heck.
Yes, she had no problem whatsoever.
No.
And this is a pretty big thing.
Well, it's the double buttock singing.
That's your secret.
True butts.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, good to know.
No, but that's just so elegant, the way she sings, so polished.
Yeah. So do you think it's a character choice, or do you think it's a...
She just sings that way.
She just sings that way.
I think she just
sings that way.
She woke
up like that.
I don't know, it doesn't just seem like who she is in some ways. You know, I feel like that's just her.
So you think she maybe... I mean, like, I haven't heard... I've heard maybe 6 or 7 recordings of hers. Maybe 8 if I include the duet with Freddie Mercury. But, you know.
Please tell me we're going to hear that. Oh my gosh,
yes,
it's the greatest thing ever.
It's not on the tracks tonight.
Can it be maybe a bonus on the blog?
Yeah, we'll put it on the blog as a bonus for all of you.
Freddie Mercury.
But it's one of those things that I often think sometimes, like, when you see movies, you're like, well, that person's not acting. It's like they're the same in every movie. And maybe there's a little bit of that with, you know, Montserrat Caballé. It's like she delivers vocally this same pure ideal, you know,
yes.
No matter what the character is. There's not the text painting we talked about in other things.
She's not a singer that you wouldn't want your voice student to listen to. You know what
right.
I mean? She has everything that, like, a singer could hope to have.
Yes.
And I don't miss the histrionics at all.
But it's an interesting match with Domingo, because one of the things about Domingo is that he's always been lauded for is his, you know, acting ability, not just physically, but also with his voice. And,
mm-hmm.
and we were remarking on it earlier without even pointing it out, the contrast in the two voices and the singing styles.
Yeah, there's definitely like a really palpable energy that you get from the, you know, from this, particularly from him.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's really remarkable.
He is definitely the energetic half of the duet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you feel he's driving the scene and she is responding.
Yeah.
At least that's what I feel.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Well, excellent. Great choice, Paige.
Yeah.
Yes. Really good choice.
No, it's just, it's you know, I wouldn't have picked it, so that's a great choice. I probably wouldn't have picked any of these. That's why I have all of you. But what I did pick was this next selection, which is our On the Way to the Dump selection. And I'll play that now, but I'm going to at least tell you all ahead of time that Limoncello
is in trouble.
I'm gonna tell you all that it's from the Baltimore Opera Company's vocal competition. It is not from an actual opera. So
I'm excited.
There we go. We've all been in competitions of some sort or another, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
So excellent. All right. Without further ado. Okay, actually, psych. We forgot to talk about wine number three.
That was just a teaser.
So let's talk about wine number three. That's a teaser for what.
But did you hear that French? Woo!
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a competition.
That was pretty great.
That's
so
much fun. So
wine number three, what did we think? Different than the first two?
Love it.
Totally
definitely
different.
It's my favorite. So.
Really
yeah.
good.
Well, my favorite.
Yeah.
Did you like that comment? Really good.
Yeah. Right. You know, that's what matters.
Well, I think it was definitely the roundest of the three.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The acidity is there that we've come to expect now from Alvarinho, but it wasn't, you know, like a bitch slap across the face or anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a backbone to the whole thing, but there's like a this one, actually, I thought was creamy in a sense.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's
almond creamy, but maybe that's just me, because I had a delicious brownie. You know. I get pear on the nose, too.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. Yes, very round. Yes, this wine is drawn in circles.
Circular, even.
But I also felt it had, like, I know Paige has told me I use this word too much. It has a minerality to it. It has a very kind of like a wet stone characteristic to
totally.
It.
Totally.
Yeah.
This was, I remember my, you know, junior wine tasting 101 back in the day. But they always said, you know, if you have to swallow a lot after you have that first, you know, that's a good wine. And, you know, I have nothing else to say.
The ones are trying to be an adult.
Ooh, I'm blushing.
Now I'm blushing. I don't blush. I've had so much Botox in my face. I can't blush anymore.
It's not true.
Anyway, but wine number three. I think was a big favorite with most of us.
Yes, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I'll have to say it was my least favorite in terms of the finish.
Okay.
Okay. I still like number one, especially if you're going to be eating stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, this was maybe a more sipping wine. Yeah. I mean, not that you
versus
couldn't have it
sculpting
with food.
Like a normal.
No, I was going to say,
shooting it back.
Sipping as like on its own or with very little to eat,
oh,
as
yes,
opposed to the other
yes,
one, you were
yes.
like, oh, this would be great with food, as
with
opposed
sushi.
To. You know, well, with sushi.
Or
yes, this is a nice contemplative wine, where the other one is, no, like you were just, you know, thinking about stuff.
Gotcha.
What the heck am I going to submit for my next, you know,
podcast?
Wine, Women, and Song podcast.
And now for something completely different.
All right, and now we will go back all the way to the door.
Are we going to hear that French introduction again?
Would you like to hear that again? Let's hear it again. All right, we'll hear it again.
Offenbach's Décolleté Top Fumant. Thank you.
Well, it sounds like he hit that last note.
Yes.
Wow.
It's too bad that recording's not in better shape.
Actually, the recording, I think, is in fine shape. I think the microphone was far too close for the singer. Because it was only when he was going for these higher notes or going, in fortissimo mode.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think the recording is in actually fairly good shape. And it's a shame,
again,
Zoe, you always talk about the microphone placement.
I do.
And it's sad that because this was a vocal competition, that's kind of like the way it ended up.
Yeah,
being.
I can't really do a sound check, huh?
No, not in the competition. So, this would be my turn to say who it is, but does anybody have a guess? Because some of you have sung with this person before.
Really?
You can say out loud.
Some of us in this room?
Yes, some of you in this room.
Like, only Jessica, since no?
No, I have no idea.
Mark Delevan.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Wow.
Yeah.
I saw his Rigoletto, Baltimore Opera. That was very amazing to me.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
1987,
wow.
Mark Delevan.
Did he win the competition?
He better.
I don't know because I haven't listened to the end of the competition
yet.
That was awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it really was very beautiful.
Oh, I mean, like, I'm going to, if you're listening to this and some of those distorted passages sound muted when you're listening, it will be because I've gone back in and done some technical things so that they don't blast your ears off, as occasionally happened to us in here due to that distortion. But one of the great things, even through it, is you can really hear his voice. You know,
uh-huh.
It wasn't like in our first podcast when we had truly distortion that was like you couldn't even hear the singing in there. Here you could still kind of hear that core sound. Like you were like, I think he hit that last note because sounded like it was ringing there in the center of the crappy recording.
Yeah. Well, I think with our Baltimore Opera Company recordings, I think some of the ones we've heard are clearly the tape has been compromised.
Correct.
That, as we've just said, that is, I think that really, the tape has not been compromised. It's the recording that pretty much stinks.
Yeah.
But how exciting. I confess I had no idea that Baltimore Opera used to have a vocal competition.
No.
Of course, they used to have a young artist program, which
is
so
important.
Indeed. but which, you know, a young artist program is so important for the continuation of our art form, but vocal competitions as well are
they give away, I think I listened a little bit of the opening of the recording. They give away like around $15,000 total in prize money between all of the different winners. And there
That's
was in,
good,
like an audience. Yeah, in 1987.
Yeah.
Do we know who was playing?
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I'd have to go back and really, really listen because there's a lot of introduction stuff at the beginning that I recorded that I was like, fast forward. I want to hear the singers, you know.
Yeah.
And God bless the hostess for the night. She had a really thankless job, but the voice just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
But there are some other singers that maybe we'll pull out later because we know their names as well from this. And there, and actually, overall, some of the recordings, anybody who knows Delevan's voice is a big, full voice.
Yeah, it's huge.
And huge, right? And so some of the voices that are not quite as big don't have this issue. That's another reason why I know the recording is really good. But I felt that this was a good one for us to do now because, we hadn't had a male singer, from the Baltimore Opera Company, really, other than the ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's a connection to some of us in the room who know him and have worked with him, and he's a talent, and that's again
mm-hmm.
the kind of we talked about last time. Maybe it was Evelyn Lear that we heard, and
mm-hmm.
Mark Delevan. I mean, that opera company had a lot of great singers that came through.
Because Mark didn't just
he didn't just sing the competition.
He came back and did Rigoletto, and he did Scarpia and Tosca. And quite a few other things,
mm-hmm.
and of course sings at the Met and other places. So that's
shabby career.
I know. So it's exciting.
Well, you know, it's amazing he's had the career he's had. I mean, he does with that just average voice. He had me at his introduction. So
and again, that piece was from the Tales of Hoffmann.
Yes.
And that's a very interesting work. It's basically, one of those like Patrick Duffy dream sequence kind of, yes, you know, operas where like the opening scene is like at a bar and he starts telling these stories and then at the end it's like, oh yeah, well that was all me really, or that was, you know, autobiographical type,
yes,
type drawn upon stories. But it's really interesting because the roles are played, different roles in each story, but usually, not always, but usually done by the same singer in the case of the tenor and the baritone. The tenor usually is singing the hero and the baritone playing the villain in this, and not often, and not as often, the soprano is not always the same.
But you can.
But you can do it.
Same.
You can. No, you can.
Yeah.
It's just not
I've,
done
no,
as often.
No, but actually, this was my first. This was my first opera that I did as a professional opera singer in the chorus, and it was very, very fun. And the soprano that they had, she did all of the roles.
Right.
Wow. She's she worked with Baltimore, Patterson, Susan Patterson?
Susan Patterson, sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
she's amazing, yeah.
Very
so
nice.
She did all of it.
She's awesome.
Yeah, but it's not that common.
No.
No,
it's not because
right?
it's, I mean, they're all, I mean, you you have to have the right singer to do all of them because literally it could be. But, you know, as we women know, we can take many shapes and forms. We are cunning creatures.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, and it just adds to the, either way, it adds to the drama. If you have three.
The only time I've seen it was three different people.
Okay.
Okay. But.
For the women or for the villains as well?
For the women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, some people think, you know, Violetta and Traviata should be three different women, and some people have even done the show that way.
Yes, they have.
But I digress. You know,
sometimes you have to.
You talk about taking on different forms. Well, this is, I think, three different forms of Al Greenyard.
All right,
yes.
tell us
right?
What we got.
So number one, who liked number one best?
I did.
All right, who liked one? That's one, Heather. And who liked number two best? And who liked number three best? Oh, wow, four. The other four like number three best. Okay, so number one is Bodegas Nora Aborino. It is from the Rias Baixas region. And this is one of the operas that I would say, you know, kind of like led the charge for this becoming a more prominent, you know, great varietal. And it delivers very solidly in what people think of when they think of this group. The second, and I think that kind of actually paired well with our, selection of Teresa
Berganza.
All right. So then the second one here is Tangent Wines, which is from actually Edna Valley in California. So this is not Spanish. This is an American wine,
it's
but
an
it
imposter.
Is.
Imposter. It's assimilating.
It's assimilating and paired very well with the number two selection. But I think we noticed that it was definitely a very different than the other
yes.
than the other two. It had more of those round kind of fruit characteristics. And then the third one,
which was
the big winner in our group, is again from the Rias Baixas region, and this is the Albariño de Fifinianes, Tres Año. And it is actually a different type of Albariño. Now so I should talk a little bit about this. So the first Albariño, the Nora, was fermented in stainless steel and then aged for 5 months in French oak, stirred once on the lees, which is the dead yeast cells. Yes. Actually, you'll appreciate it. It makes
actually.
A difference in wine. So they have a better word for it. It's a French word. It's called betonnage.
Yes.
So anyway, so that was the first one. And that's a more, like I say, typical production. The second one was the one from Edna Valley, California. That was 100% stainless steel throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one... was the Tres Años, is this one was aged for 3 years, all stainless steel. So all that creaminess you got is because during those 3 years,
they did a lot of pepinage. They did a lot of stirring of the leaves. And that actually adds all of that kind of creaminess, fullness element. And these winemakers are trying to, you know, show you more the potential of what the grape can do versus just be fresh, young, vibrant. I mean, they're trying to make it a more quote unquote serious wine as opposed to, you know, drink young, drink now, drink young, drink it kind of wine.
Drink
which
it.
Is well that was kind of like the moniker a lot with Albarinos. And then I should tell you price points. So number one, about $15-16 a bottle. Number two, about the same $15 or $16 a bottle.
Yeah. How much do we play for all that stirring yeast?
$45 a bottle for number three.
So you stir the yeast more, you got to pay more.
With 3 years of going in and stirring the leaves, I mean, you know, that sounds like a thankless job, right?
Somebody's
going
to get paid.
So I would say that if I was going shopping and deciding, because, well, I am frugal, but I think number one is a really good value for money.
Yes.
Because I thought it, number three was my favorite.
Yes.
But number one was also very yummy.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah, no, they were all really good, all very different. But I think we also agreed that the third wine was more contemplative. There was more there to enjoy. Hence, I guess, why some people would be willing to pay more. Mm-hmm.
Because of those Tres Años, baby.
That's right, those Tres Años. Before we move into our play out song, I want to remind everybody, try to follow us between podcasts on Facebook, Twitter, as well as check out our blog post. We're going to have some specific things that weren't here that are going to be on the blog post, like, you know, Freddie Mercury and
somebody's been taking very candid shots of us.
Those will be posted.
I do not photograph well, and if they're posted,
you to approve them first.
I'm posting under protest, but just
very good.
Fair enough.
So I remind you to please follow us there. And today, our playoff song was picked by Jessica, so I'm going to let her talk about it right now.
I don't have much to say about this song except that I love it. I find it very uplifting and fun, and I hope you all enjoy it.
Wonderful.
Fabulous.
And
should I say who it is?
Sure.
It's Regina Spektor.
Yay.
Forget it.